start right now. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Today on our program, after a spot of geek news, we're speaking with Paul McGrath about his site and business, CarShare.biz, a commuting, carpool commuting tool for the commuters and businesses that like to support people commuting in their company. CarShare.biz, that's a topic right after Geek News. During the second half of the show, I welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. If you'd like to participate more in Geek Speak, we are currently looking for phone volunteers, people to answer the phones, be a part of the Geek Speak behind the scenes. If you're interested, please give us a call at the station, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, Senior PR Marketing Manager for NetCell, and Drew Meyer, Storage Specialist at AdaptTech. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning.
Before we get into our discussion with Paul McGrath and discussion about his car sharing business or business about commuting and carpooling together, let's do some Geek Speak news. And someone else, please start talking because I am flubbing all over the place. Sean, I'll start with you.
We'll start with Drew.
Oh, whoa, hang on. Let's see. Kapow is the title. Everybody knows about the Temple 1 spacecraft implant explosion last week. It's exciting news for NASA. They've nailed their target. It was a complete bullseye, and I think really gives them some props, some credibility, hopefully some more funding for more cool experiments to come forward in the future. Space.com has the top 10 photos from the actual impact event. I was out staring up at the sky with a friend with her telescope in the evening, but I couldn't see a thing, not even a speck of flash of nothing. But the photos are extraordinary. So go to space.com and check them out. You can see the impact, the flash of light, the explosion, the jet of vaporized gases that come off the comet, and big thing.
The deep impact. Thank you very much, Drew, for that. Sean, are you ready?
Yeah. It looks like IBM has announced two new lines of PowerPC 970 processors, better known as the G5.
Yeah, why are they doing that if Apple's...
Probably because they put a lot of money and effort into making these chips, and they want to try and sell some before they can't.
Do you know of anybody...
That's my personal guess.
Do you know of anybody else that's using the G5 or the PowerPC in their systems?
I don't know anybody.
I only know Apple, right?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you meant personally.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, it would be Apple. So these are newer, lower power 970FX processors that consume 13 to 16 watts, meant for notebooks.
Interesting.
A G5 and a notebook. Isn't that interesting? If Apple would have just waited. They'll be at frequencies of 1.2 gigahertz to 1.6 gigahertz. They're also coming out with a desktop version that will be clocked at 1.4 to 2.5 gigahertz. Each core has 1 megabyte of L2 cache. And the core can be turned off to save power.
You know how these might get used? These might get used by the companies that take and mod Macintoshes and enhance them. So, like, you got an old Beige G3, you can make it a G4. I mean, there's ways to upgrade your Macs. Apple won't do it. They want you to buy new hardware. But there's little companies that have add-in carts that have done it for years. And I'm wondering if one of them will take this idea of being able to get probably pretty inexpensive processors, because IBM has put so much money into them, and they're not going to be purchased from Apple, to upgrade laptops. We'll keep an eye on that story. But in general, it looks like potentially a dead product before it even gets launched.
I think G5 has been stretched rather far as it is, mm-hmm. and there are a lot of people who probably need Apples and can't wait for Intel-based Apple machines.
I don't think Apple's going to come out with a laptop G5, so this processor doesn't really have a real home. Thank you, Sean, for that update. Time to go back over to Drew now.
Let's see. It looks like some interesting developments are coming on the way for broadband deployment. We did that show a couple weeks ago about home broadband, DSL specifically, but also cable. Slashdot has an article on how Verizon DSL users are going to have fiber, about half of them, in the next 4 years, and SBC subscribers will have 10 to 20 megabit DSL. So, and then also one-tenth of Bell South customers will have 50 megabit per second DSL. So that means dramatically faster than what you have today. Today you have DSL and the speeds of, what, less than a megabit per second? Half a megabit per second, depending on what package you buy, up and down.
Yeah.
And cable companies will also deploy new technology that will bring eventually 100 megabit network speeds to end users. So from your house out, you'll have 100 times faster than your current modem, which ought to really dramatically impact, you know, file swapping, video on demand, megabit. That's a megabit.
Now, do they say what frequency?
I haven't gone through the whole report. Broadband Reports is the website where the article is.
Currently, wireless technologies transmit at 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz frequencies. Now, the digital spectrum for, well, I should say the analog spectrum for television is 700 megahertz.
Mm-hmm.
From what I'm reading, the government plans, when they move the TVs over to digital full-time in the end of 2006, probably 2008 realistically, they want to move that analog, they want to sell that. And wireless carriers are really excited about that because then they can move wireless down to 700 megahertz range. And at a lower frequency, that signal would...
Less interference.
Yeah, it'd be less interference. It would pretty much go everywhere.
Does that mean that
TV does now?
If I'm watching TV, analog TV, in the 700 megahertz frequency, I'll start seeing something
else. It means
else.
That when the TV stations go pure digital, you will not be able to get analog TV over the air.
There
that is
go.
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow, that's the plan at least. We still haven't seen that come to fruition. And it seems a little strange to kill a system in place that has, you know, millions of clients, if you will, in the television.
A lot of people are still using, over-the-air TV. Yeah.
All right, thanks. Sean, I'm going to go to you, sir. That seemed kind of like your story because you had so much more information, but go ahead and tell us the next one.
Drew, I respect it.
No, don't.
I wanted to say there are going to be a bunch of critical fixes for Windows and Office coming your way, our way, soon. So you may want to go to, if you're using Windows XP, go to Start Programs and get your new updates.
Windows updates?
There's a new update for tablet PC users. If you don't have, it's interesting, there's a story, I guess the product manager of security at Microsoft, Mario Juarez, it said Tuesday at Microsoft's Tech Ed conference in Amsterdam that not that many people are upgrading to Service Pack 2.
Really?
Which is very surprising.
Poor Mario. Don't envy your job, my friend.
Yeah, 1 in 3 machines that run Windows XP are still reluctant to upgrade.
Okay, it's time. If you're still out there wondering if you should upgrade to Service Pack 2, or even if you have upgraded to Service Pack 2, you really should. The security vulnerabilities in Service Pack 1 are just horrible.
Especially if you're using a notebook
Windows
with
XP.
Wireless connectivity. Mm. Mm-hmm. You need to get that
you're
Service Pack 2.
You're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
I feel like a sex ed teacher. You know, you use Service Pack 2.
Every time.
So you can upgrade that. You can do that from, if you have a high-speed connection, you can do that by going
to
Windows
and you
update.
Can't even get new updates from Microsoft's update site unless you have Service Pack 2 installed.
Right. And, of course, I'm a big concern.
A lot of the good ones, anyway.
Through dial-up, it's just not, it doesn't make sense to upgrade. It just takes too long. But go ahead and spend some time. Go to Microsoft's site. Do a search. I'm not sure where exactly it is, but you can get them to ship you the free Service Pack 2 CD, so it's a little easier. And I highly recommend it if you're running Windows XP that you, if you don't have Service Pack 2, to get it. How do you test if you have Service Pack 2? I mean, how do you know?
You right-click on My Computer on your desktop and go to Properties, and it'll tell you if you're using Service Pack 1 or 2.
Okay.
And you can also go to your Control Panel and go to System and do it the same way.
Sean, thank you. Drew, back to you, sir.
So the Sasser virus, which was written about 2 years ago by a kid in Germany, his name is Sven Jaschen, looks like. He's 19 years old today. He was 17 when he wrote the thing, and he released it on his 18th birthday, April 29th, 2004. The Sasser worm was blamed for shutting down British Airways flight check-ins, hospitals, government offices in Hong Kong, part of Australia's rail network, Finnish banks, British Coast Guard stations, and naturally millions of other computers worldwide. It's one of the most destructive worms that's ever hit the Internet. He was just sentenced to 30 hours of community work, either at a hospital or a retirement home, because they tried him as a minor or as a 17-year-old because he was 17 when he actually performed the action. No civil suits have come to play yet. even though, you know, naturally...
I heard a great story about this, that the idea of the actual impact of this is, that's published, that's official, if you will, has to do with the amount of complaints that have come forth and what kind of money, revenue you've lost and stuff. And large companies don't want to claim that they were affected at all by it, so they don't put the numbers in, because it looks bad that they have a security vulnerability that a 17-year-old can break through and damage the company, the business. So there's a lot more effect of this virus than he's getting blamed for, if you will. So I think it's kind of interesting. That's a pretty minor sentence, 30 hours of volunteer.
It does seem minor.
Service work?
It does seem minor. I don't have an explanation why. It's amazing. Microsoft patched the flaw before the virus was released. Okay, going back to our previous discussion.
Mm-hmm.
18 days after they posted the patch, the virus appeared, and it attacked computers that hadn't yet downloaded the patch.
Right.
So
there's really a perfect example of getting the patches right away, because if not, you're totally vulnerable.
It could have been avoided had you been confident enough in the patch to download it, but
right,
you never know.
Sean, another news story? Thank you, Drew, very much.
Yeah, nothing big, but interesting. The new Google toolbar for Firefox has been released by Google.
Yeah, you sent me a link yesterday. I didn't have time to look at it. What does it do?
It adds a toolbar to Firefox.
Is that a nice feature?
I like it.
I don't understand. I mean, Firefox by default has a search field up in the upper right-hand corner, and it's set out of the box to be Google. So what's different?
Yeah, but you got to move your mouse way up there to the upper right-hand corner, and who wants to do that?
Come on, seriously. What's the bar do that the search thing?
I know I don't. It takes a long time to move the mouse up there.
I'm using a trackpad.
Where is the bar located, Sean?
Lyle, I don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
The bar is located on the left, underneath where you type in your URLs, so it makes more sense. And it's pretty, too. Although I'm using a different Google toolbar. I need to uninstall this and put the value in it. But you can see, you can find it at toolbar.google.com.
Thank you, Sean, for that update of a feature that I'm not sure anybody needs. But, you know, this good time as any to say, use Firefox. Don't use Internet Explorer. Drew, last news story for today, so we can get on to our topic at hand with Paul.
All right, a blast from the past. In Anchorage, a track from a three-toed dinosaur believed to be 70 million years old has been discovered in Denali National Park up in Alaska.
How do you date a footprint?
That's
delicately?
A great question. It's 9 inches long and 6 inches wide, and it's...
That's my footprint.
It's big. The meat eater was... It was a carnivorous dinosaur, 9 to 13 feet long. Pretty sizable critter. And I don't say here how they know exactly... I mean, I guess they know the bone structure of the skeletons that they have, and they match it to the foot, and they guess...
Probably the soil as well, what's in the soil at that time, because soil's not just dirt.
There you go.
It's got a lot of nutrients and everything.
The best thing is it was found on June 27th, which was my birthday.
Happy birthday, Drew.
Yay.
Happy
dinosaur
birthday.
Tracks.
All right. That's the Geek News with Sean and Drew. I'm Lyle Troxler. Listen to Geek Speak. We are now going to turn the conversation over to Paul McGrath, creator of CarShare.biz. He joins us to talk about his carpool support website. For those of you in Santa Cruz, you may know Paul McGrath from the improv group GM. Paul, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
I love having Brits on air because we sound so official and interesting and maybe even intelligent. Okay, so, Paul, what is up with CarShare? Why did you start it? Why did you start the business?
Let me see. I was working for an electronics company probably 93, 94. I moved across to the UK, and I was working for this company with about 200 people. And I was interested in carpooling. I've always been interested in alternative commuting, like biking to work and such. And I wanted to find somebody to carpool with. And the only systems out there at the moment, at the time, were systems where you'd give your information to share it with the general public. And I was thinking I'd be a lot more attracted to a system that was within my company, that I could match up with somebody within my company.
Because the information you're sharing is where you live and what time you live around and where you work.
Exactly.
It's kind of private information.
Yes, exactly. So I would definitely be... more interested in a system that hooked me up with my fellow co-workers rather than the general public.
Now, last time we had you on, we were talking with you 2 years ago. I don't recall.
I think it was about probably 2 years ago, yeah.
We were talking to you about your electronics engineering the business you were doing at the time.
Yeah, that's
you were
right.
Doing RF filtering and such, and
IC design and
IC
such.
IC design stuff. And you got out of that. Was there a layoff? Was there just time to move on?
Pretty much it was time to move on. I mean, I've had this idea since 93, 94, and in 2003 I met the right people to make it happen.
And you wanted to launch it?
Yeah, and at the end of 2004 we pretty much finished the software and ready to kind of really go for it.
Okay, so let's talk about how this works. You find a company, like, can we talk about the companies you have on? Is that okay?
Yeah,
so
sure.
So Plantronics, for example, Santa Cruz company.
Yes.
So Plantronics signs up and says, yes, our employee base might want to use your system.
Right.
We'll set up an intranet basically for Plantronics people, and then they log in and create accounts. And how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, Carshare is basically like a regular website, and we set up a specific URL for that company. So it'd be basically carshare.biz/Plantronics, and then Plantronics employees can go to that website, and only Plantronics can get into that website.
So how do you filter that out? How do you?
We pretty much do it with the email URL.
Okay.
So only if you've got
Plantronics.com email address.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that makes
exactly.
sense.
And that's how it's made exclusively for the company. And that's also very attractive for the company because it doesn't require IT support from the company.
Right.
So all they have to do is publish the URL.
All Plantronics has to do is pay you some money and the people in the company get to use the system.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's say I work at Plantronics and I'm designing headsets all day and I want to commute from... Well, Plantronics is in Santa Cruz, so let's say I'm living in San Jose.
Right.
I'm assuming Plantronics has quite a few employees that don't live in the general Santa Cruz area. It's so expensive.
That's true.
So they log in and say, this is my zip or this is my address. I mean, how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, the basic system is that there are two main options for carpooling. Like, you basically say, as a driver, you actually say, am I willing to offer a ride? Am I willing to take passengers? So you get on the system and say, I'm willing to offer a ride, and you say where you're commuting from and say, this is my schedule and these are the conditions I'll accept passengers, and, if this suits you, you can request to ride with me, basically.
Okay.
So that's one side of the carpooling equation.
And what's the incentive for a person that has a car to take on passengers?
I mean, the main incentive is that the daily commute is probably the worst part of the day for many people who commute nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And driving in extreme traffic is pretty horrible. And to actually share the burden of driving, I mean, it's very attractive to me. I mean, if I have to commute over the hill, I would definitely like to share the chore of driving.
So the general idea would
cost?
The general idea would be you would sometimes drive and sometimes other person will drive,
exactly.
Like a normal carpool.
Exactly.
And so, well, Sean, you're a big commuter. You drive all the time over the other direction, living in Brookdale and driving over. How do you get to San Jose, Sean?
Bear Creek Road, so through Boulder Creek.
What's your paradigm with commuting? Does carpooling for you make sense?
No.
Why not?
Because I like to listen to audiobooks in the car.
So you have private time. You've used that time.
Yeah, private time for me.
Uh-huh.
But I guess sometimes it would be kind of nice. But I don't know. How do people feel about... You get in a car with a stranger. I guess they're really not because of your workmates.
Yeah.
I work at a company that has 40 employees, so I'm not sure a system like this would be.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, we're actually going for companies that are large enough to make this work.
How large is large enough?
That is a very good question. I'm still at the learning phase at the moment, and we've got it in three companies, two companies of about 150 people and one company of 425, Plantronics. And we're still in a learning phase trying to find out how big a company needs to be. And it's actually looking very promising. Like, the companies are... about 100 and 150 do look like they're large enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are getting pretty good participation.
People. And you're getting multiple group participation. I mean, is it kind of based, like I say, companies, if two people live on opposite sides of the company and commute, there's no reason for them to share. So is there some way of determining how they would carpool together? I mean, where they are based where the company is? How do you determine that information?
I mean, in terms of the company side, it's company specific, so the company is already taken care of.
Your location to go to is taken
care
of.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a whole bunch of people that work at the company, and they live all over the place. So
yes.
how do they find each other in your site? How does the site work that helps them find each other?
So, I mean, you've offered a ride, and you've said basically what city in your zip, and if you want to find who has a similar commute, you actually go to find a ride, and then it gives you the whole list of cities and zips where everybody's driving from, and it's very easy to narrow it down to the people who are living around the corner from you or whatever.
Okay.
I think it's a good way to go. I like that you're targeting companies because I think people are more apt to
share their private information.
With they're all going
people.
To the same place and they work for the same company. They have something in common they can talk about.
You know, it's wonderful when three employees show up late. You know, traffic, they're all showing up at the same time. That's a lot better case.
Yeah, this is when I was living in Berkeley and commuting to Imagine Media. There were some people over there that, you know, I would commute with every now and then. Very difficult because as an editor, you have very different hours, and it's just really difficult to make it work. But one time, I was riding in the car with a friend of mine, and he said, you know, we should stop off and pick someone up and take them to San Francisco. And I was like, well, what? Who? He says, well, I don't know who. So there's this overpass in Berkeley where people just kind of stand, you know. And what it is you pull up, and they get in the car, and then you take them over to San Francisco and drop them off at a couple different, you know, designated zones.
Also, it's like casual carpooling.
Yeah, it's the way it works is you don't talk unless they initiate, and you know there's all these rules involved. It seemed really weird, but it wasn't that bad when we picked the person up and took them over. It was just kind of okay. There's just someone else in the car, you know. But I think a lot of people You know, that's just a little too out there. And to get on an internet company, you know, a service like this and get hooked up with a complete stranger, I don't think a lot of people would be into that. So I think you're doing the right thing.
Thanks a lot.
It's a good way
to
go after it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in terms of casual couple, that's a very interesting model. And we've kind of combined the two in a way. Right. Like, I mean, the conventional carpooling systems out there are kind of assuming that you're hooking up with a complete stranger, and it suggests that you meet at a cafe to check them out before and such. And it suggests the model is like as if you're going to have this long-term carpooling arrangement right from the start. And the model for this is you put down your information, you just try it once with somebody in the company, and if it works out as a long-term carpooling arrangement, then fair enough, you know, that's great. But there's no kind of pressure or, you know, you don't have to do that. You can just try with different people, different days and such. And it allows you to mix and match with different drivers, you know, to find the best match.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer. We're speaking with Paul McGrath about his company, CarShare.biz. CarShare.biz basically helps people from the same company find carpooling alternatives. How does a company get hooked up with you? How does the system work in that regard?
I mean, if they go to my website, they're better send me an email at paulm@carshare.biz, or they're better. They can call me directly as well at 831-278-0312, and I'll be more than happy to help them.
You've got a little demo site up on your site, carshare.biz/your company.
Yeah, so
you're able to log in. Is that not filtering off email address? Anybody can add and kind of see it?
Well, I mean, the way it's set up at the moment is you won't be able to log in, but you better click around and you get a good idea of how the system works from even from the logged out version.
Right. So let's see. You put your location. You put where you're coming from, and you put the hours that you normally work. So you check. You know, maybe you only want this feature on the days that you're not dropping kids off at daycare or something.
Exactly.
So you really get to pick the days that are interesting to you and your schedule.
Yeah.
Are you giving reports to the company to see how viable a service it is to their staff?
Absolutely. I mean, as well as the carpool matching, we've actually got some other cool features in it as well, and that is it actually generates statistics on how effective it is in terms of, you know, number of people are signing up to the service, you know, the percentage of people carpooling and such.
Well, what do statistics look like for, like, Plantronics, for example? Can you share that information?
I've actually got statistics for ETR, which I'd like to share. And I saw
that you had those printed out graphs. I thought,
cool.
He's got data.
And I'll show you how we can how we get these as well. So for example, that actually shows the number of users and the number of people who are offering rides, and you can actually see how it's risen.
Yeah,
time.
Yeah, and it definitely matches up with how many.
It's a steady growth.
Yeah, it's steady growth.
Yeah, steady growth. So that's still growing, and this actually shows you how many people are claiming points.
This is great. Showing graphs on air is just wonderful.
Yeah, so
tell me what CarShare points are. What are those?
Yeah. So in terms of another feature of this, which I really like, is I've got this thing called Claim Alternative Commute Points. And what it allows you to do is claim points for every time you take an alternative commute. So if you're a carpool driver, you get a point every time you take a passenger. Or if you're a passenger, you get a point. And also, as well as encouraging carpooling, it encourages all other types of alternative commuting. Like biking to work or taking transit, because they're just as viable as removing traffic from the roads as anything else.
And what do these points add up to be?
But basically, every time you gain a point, it's like getting a raffle ticket. Mm-hmm. And at the end of every month, you can actually win prizes. So that's how it works. So that's how the incentive scheme works.
So it's a great incentive for employees to commute.
Yeah.
To carpool together.
So that actually serves as the incentives and the points that people claim that actually serves as generating the statistics as well to see how effective it is.
Now, the companies you mentioned, all local to California, but the system could work anywhere.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the way the system is designed, it could work at any company anywhere in the U.S.
So if you're in a company that has 100 employees or more and you're interested in this service, go take a look at carshare.biz. We're speaking with Paul McGrath. We'll come back. We're going to open up the phone lines to anything you might want to ask us. This program is sponsored by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue, online at santacruzelectronics.com. Drew, you can read both of those if you'd like, but one at a time. Go ahead.
The Monterey Bay Area Working Group of the California Clean Money Campaign will meet on Wednesday, July 20th, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Aptos Library, 7695 SoCal Drive in Aptos. The meeting will begin with a showing of Bill Moyer's film, Road to Clean Elections. Information is available at 479-4769.
You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can send us an email by going to geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us.
This week in This American Life, one of the few cases that have gone to trial in the war on terror is an Indian businessman who the government caught selling a missile to a terrorist. The only trouble is, the terrorist wasn't really a terrorist, but a government agent. And the missile was also a fake, supplied by the U.S. government, and delivered to the businessman's hotel room. In other words, the U.S. staged its own illegal weapons purchase, and then convicted a man of it. This week, on This American Life.
That's Sunday morning at 10 on KUSP.
The Open Road, Friday, July 8th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This week, Matt Pierce welcomes local singer Stella Doro for a chat and possible vocal workout from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Can't make it.
Oh,
okay, wait,
I just received a flash breaking update.
She can't make it.
Sounds like
Bummer.
Stella's not going to be here. So tune into the Open Road with Matt today from 11 to 1 p.m.
Right, and Matt is here, and he's picking out music now, and of course his show's great every week. So tune in. It'll start in a half an hour when we get out of here. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide access, internet service, including DSL 6.0, which I don't know what that is, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. DSL 6.0. What is that, folks? Sean, you know?
Maybe they're trying to compete with AOL.
Yeah, new features. So take a look at Cruise.io for that. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are Geek Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and, if I may, Geek Paul McGrath.
Certainly.
Thank you. Paul is talking about his company, carshare.biz, and we're taking phone calls from you.
And emails, and we have one.
And we'll start with that.
If you want to send an email to the Geeks, just go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and send us a message. We have this from Zoe. What happens if a big company with locations in different cities sign up?
Good question. I mean, carshare.biz is actually set up so we can do different work sites for different companies.
Okay.
So I mean, generally, what we want to do is set up a different carshare.biz website for a particular geographical location, for example, like the Bay Area, Apple computer, for example.
Sure.
But if there's something on the East Coast, for example, in Apple, we'd probably want to set up a different.
This is in the company's best interest, right? To try and get their employees to, you know, come, hopefully help the environment, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Help the
HR departments love this sort of thing, right? I would think.
Yeah. I mean, the worst part of people's day is the commute. People are always complaining about it. It's a horrible part of the day. So anything a company can do to really make it better makes sense.
Now, she also asks, what does it cost?
We can't ask that question. Actually, being public radio, we really shouldn't be talking about cost. You can give a ballpark figure if you'd like, but if you'd like not to, that's fine as well.
I would think it wouldn't cost the commuter anything, right?
Well, it doesn't
it's
cost
a service
the
usually by...
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't cost the commuter anything.
Yeah. So and if you're a company and you're interested, just contact CarShare.
Yeah, I'm sure Paul will help you out.
I won't tell you exactly what the cost is, but the last company that signed up, that they were actually comparing this system, we're trying to get a van pooling system together, and this was so much more cost-effective and attractive to them than trying to set up van pools.
Definitely, okay. That makes sense. All right, well, we got a couple calls. We're going to go right to someone a little different than what our topic is at hand, but it's fine today. We'll take any questions or comments you have. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. In Watsonville, Jane, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. Yeah, I had a question. I've been kind of hesitant to do either online banking or online investing because, it just seems like there's all these stories of people could go into your computer and look at your information. And so I have a Mac, and I just want to know, aside from checking that the bank has or investment company has encryption, what else should you do? Someone said something about you should set up a network or something?
Well, you're on a Macintosh, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you're not going to be really susceptible to current-day viruses or anything of that nature. It's important to keep your machine up to date. We're talking about that. There is this idea that if you have a computer connected all the time to the network through DSL and such, that you really should have a private home network.
Or a personal firewall.
Or a personal firewall.
Even a software firewall would work.
But on a Macintosh, you don't really have to concern about that. What you're concerned at this point is that you're going to store information about your financial life on your computer. So you don't want anybody to get access to it. But in general, you're going to be okay in that regard. And the second is when you transmit that information, anytime you submit it or give it to another site, there are some general practices that you want to make sure. You want to make sure you're at the right place. And that's as trickier than it may sound. Let's say you use Bank of America and you assume bankofamerica.com is the website that you want to go to. But if you type that incorrectly, let's say you just transvert two of the characters. Transvert, is that a word, Sean? I don't
think it
is.
No.
Transpose.
Thank you, transpose. Thank you very much. If you transpose two of the characters of bankofamerica.com, you're going to get a site that's probably fraudulent that looks just like it. I mean, it's a possibility. And then when you send in that information, it will look secure. Everything's great. And, in fact, you're giving somebody not Bank of America your information. So that's something you want to be really careful about.
And you should always initiate these connections to your bank or sales. Never, if you get an email from, like, PayPal that says, oh, something's wrong with your account, you need to, you know, log in and check in on it, click on this link, most likely, that's a bad link.
Yeah.
If you feel that you need to do that, don't click on the link of the email. Just go to the web browser, type it in yourself. Make sure you're going to the right place.
And that's an important thing. If you start using your bank, you're gonna like get a bank statement and look on your bank statement for the address of originally. Take that address, put it in, make a bookmark, and always use that bookmark to access the site. That will be a little more secure. And then every once in a while, check to make sure that you are doing the right thing. So, okay, let's talk about the security features of the website. If they've got a little lock symbol on the site and you see up in the URL space where the address shows up, https://something... When you do that, you know that other people, other reputable people, think that that address that you're going to is secure and safe. Unless, of course, you get a pop-up that says, this doesn't look really good. I mean, your browser will warn you. So basically, you're totally safe as long as you don't ignore your warnings, you read them, and you pay attention that you're at a secure website, HTTPS. And any banking site that is reputable is offering that. There's no reason to do any transactions online without secure socket layers enabled. Jane, is that helping you at all?
I guess I'm not sure about the firewall part of it. And then also with a Mac, even though viruses haven't been hitting the Macs, couldn't they start picking on the Macs?
Yeah. I mean, the idea being here is that do you currently do your financial system on your computer at all? Do you use like Quicken or something of that nature?
I've been just doing Quicken but not sending anything out.
Okay, so just having that information on your computer is vulnerable from the perspective of not having a firewall. But it really isn't. It's you're really safe, in my opinion.
Without a firewall.
Without a firewall on a Macintosh. Uh-huh. Now, do you use like a DSL or something of that nature?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a router in your home or you just have one computer connected to that DSL?
Just one computer.
Okay. So you go down to your local electronics shop or some big outlet or whatever. In Santa Cruz, I use Santa Cruz Electronics because they're convenient and they underwrite the show, so I like them. and you grab a home router, and they're...
I don't think she really needs that. That's way overkill.
But if she's, you know,
you can get software.
Aren't there software firewalls for the Mac?
Just software firewall. Yeah.
There's a build. Are you using OS X?
No, I'm on 8.6. My computer is only a G3 laptop.
I would do this in hardware because it's going to cost you under $50 and it will alleviate your concerns.
Here's another question. Do you plan on having more computers in your house connected to your DSL line ever? Like, are you growing?
No.
Just
my
you.
DSL's only at work because my house, there's no DSL possibilities here.
Oh, okay.
On your
that's
Mac.
Different. Wait a minute.
Is your Mac at work?
I have a laptop. I bring it being home and work. But I usually use... DSL at work.
Mm-hmm. You're fine. I wouldn't worry about it. How's that?
Okay, so without firewall, but I could use a router.
You could use a router at home if you wanted to. It would add one more layer of complexity in breaking your system, but you're already going to become... No one's going to write software to your Mac 8 operating system. So I think you're good.
I'm too ancient.
Just pay attention to the sites that you're at. That's the most important thing you can do. And don't believe email.
Okay, thanks. So
thank you. Thank you very much, Jane, for the call. All right, we took a while on that one, but I like the call, and we're going to take another call. If you'd like to call in with questions or comments, if you'd like to ask information about carshare.biz, the company by Paul McGrath, topic of the day, that's fine. You're also welcome to call with any other questions or comments. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we have Tamara from Santa Cruz. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Quite well, thank you. What's your question?
Good. I have a network question, household network. I have tried to hook up a USB adapter so that I can put one computer on a wireless. So we have DSL. We have one computer that's been working historically fine. I bought a Linksys wireless router, broadband router, wireless G broadband router, and I have the main computer hooked up to that. And then I bought
through
a Hewitt.
Through a landline, right? Through an Ethernet. Okay.
Well, yeah, so the router, you know, the line goes to the router, sure. And then one machine is hardwired from the router straight to the machine on a cable.
And is that one working?
And that one works fine.
Okay.
And it's the USB network adapter one downstairs that does not work fine.
Okay. The window, the machine that you have the USB adapter on, is it a Windows or Mac machine?
Yeah, so it's an all-PC environment.
Okay.
Are you running all XP?
Are you running Service Pack 2?
Yes.
Okay. Does your machine recognize your USB wireless adapter?
Yes.
Okay. So what
and
is...
And so in the downstairs environment, sometimes I can use the Linksys sort of... adapter control page and actually put in the passcode,
uh-huh.
And that'll allow me to connect, and sometimes that doesn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't stick or it doesn't work when you put in the right credentials.
Sometimes it doesn't even give me that as an option to do. It's like...
Have you been to the Linksys website and you're sure you have the latest software for the little utility you're talking about? That might be one step.
When we first installed the USB adapter in the second machine, it couldn't find the internet when we first did it. And so we went through the install process, but then later discovered this kind of, you know, not really obvious place to sign in and get the passcode and mm-hmm. then sort of connect. And so we did update it at that point. So when it first installed, it didn't do, like, a live update kind of thing.
You know, I have only
run into... There could be so many things going on here.
I mean, the USB dongle...
It's kind of a workaround. Did you say you added a USB adapter into the computer and then this thing attaches to that USB card?
No.
No, this is directly to a USB port on your computer.
Right. It goes into a USB port on the computer, and it's just a little small, you know, kind of business card size thing.
Yeah. Sorry, Tamara.
A little antenna.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to help you on this over the air.
But
okay.
If you want, we know a guy named Josh Weiss, who is now helping people with their computers in Santa Cruz. And he's very knowledgeable.
Josh Weiss volunteers at KUSP.
Send an email to the geeks, and I'll send you his information.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
And you can fix this. There will be a way around this, and I expect your network will work, but we don't have enough information to do it right now.
Okay, that's fine.
Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, from Santa Cruz, April. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. Am I on?
You are on air.
Oh, great. I have had Adaware for a long time. And, you know, go in there and clear it up. And then recently I added StopZilla onto it. And I was wondering if that was redundant, number one. And number two, I'm wondering what you think of StopZilla.
Sean?
I haven't used StopZilla. But having multiple Adaware
mm-hmm.
And malware detection programs
mm-hmm.
is not a bad thing. Because they all kind of check for different things.
Well, they said on StopZilla, see, Adaware, you have to go in every couple weeks and do it all yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And then with StopZilla, they say that it does it all automatically, and I don't even have to pay any attention to it. But what I've noticed is that now it takes a lot longer for it to boot up, for it to go down. You know, it's just like checking everything in sight. So this is a good thing, right?
It's kind of like Norton. It runs in the background, too, and... eats up a lot of system resources.
I have Norton, too.
So, both of those applications, then, are using a lot of your system resources.
One of the things that I was one of the people that got affected by that virus that you were talking about,
uh-huh.
that kid.
Sasser.
And, oh, man, that was really bad.
Right.
So I've just been putting everything I can think of. So that's slowing it down, but that's not a problem, right?
Yeah, Norton detects a bunch of that, too. Personally, I would keep Norton running in the background, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure you really need to have this other software running.
But
it's not a bad thing to run it every now and then.
Right, and that's what
like
Adaware kind of nice about Adaware is that you don't necessarily want it running all the time. You want to protect yourself. But there's some practices you really want to do now so you don't you aren't as affected. For example, you don't want to use Internet Explorer anymore.
I don't use Internet Explorer. I use SBC Yahoo.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting point. What shows up in the title bar of it? Does it say SBC Yahoo? Is that
yeah. Yeah.
Is it,
no, I never get
still
the
a browser.
Internet.
It's a
I have Internet
Microsoft.
Explorer, but I never use it.
Okay. The thing that says that is Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
Yeah. That's the same thing. It just has a different color on it.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, so what you want to do is you want to go to Mozilla.org and download Firefox and start using Firefox.
I have actually downloaded Firefox and have Firefox.
Use that because it's a little safer. The next step is, what's your email client? What do you use for email?
SBC Yahoo.
Okay, and when you say SBC Yahoo email, does it look like a web interface or is it some application that's running?
I think it's an application that's running.
Could it be Outlook Express?
Yes, it probably could, because that sounds really familiar.
This is great, because we've never really addressed this. We say, don't use this, don't use this, don't use this, and yet it's called something else on your computer. So when you get a service agreement from, like, SBC Yahoo, they install the stuff for you and let you work. And what they're really doing is just putting a skin on Internet Explorer and putting a skin on probably Outlook Express, and you're using the two applications that we're recommending never use. So
without even knowing it.
Without even knowing it.
Yeah, because it doesn't say anything like that.
And I'm sure you're not alone. So that's why I'm really glad that we're addressing this. So how you get away from that is downloading Firefox and downloading Thunderbird. They're both available from Mozilla.org. And the migration for email from Outlook Express to Thunderbird should be seamless and easy, but it might not be.
Okay.
But that's probably a better bet, because people normally write applications that will take over your computer and adware and stuff, assuming that you have those other features that you're using.
Well, like I said, I did download Firefox. I just never use it. And you know why?
Yeah,
because
why?
I'm older, and I'm like, ooh, those are all new.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's a new look.
But after you've started using these applications, you'll notice the adware and Stopzilla probably won't be finding as much as they used to.
Oh, yeah, man, they are just so busy. It takes 20 minutes now for my computer to boot up, because it's so busy looking for things.
Yeah. Well, you can always, you know, if you start using the other two systems, and you might, do you have DSL at home?
I do.
Yeah. Do you have a router in place?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then you're pretty protected. If you start using Firefox and you start using Thunderbird, the two, and stop using the SBC Yahoo email and web, you're probably not going to get touched by viruses and such, because they can't really reach you.
Oh, good.
But, you know, they can. It's
now,
just harder.
Something a lot of people, I don't think, do are update their router. If you've got a Linksys router, D-Link, they all have firmware, and they fix, they add security updates to their hardware. Just like Microsoft does with their software.
Well, you know what? I was wondering, too, because every once in a while I get a pop-up that says, ooh, update, you need to check this out. I'm always a little afraid of those.
If that's a pop-up that you didn't solicit, I would not trust it.
I never go. I just shut them down and make them go away. So when you talk about an update, you go to the site and ask if there's any updates?
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, that pop-up that's happening might be Microsoft Windows telling you that you've got new updates. But, yeah, you don't have to trust the pop-up.
You can just close it and go to Start, Programs, and Microsoft Update.
And go, okay.
And do it that way.
Or WindowsUpdate.com will do it for you.
WindowsUpdate.microsoft.com.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much, April, for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. What a great point. We always saying, don't use this, and it's called something else. There's basically only, on a Windows machine, there's like four web browsers that exist. There's Internet Explorer. There's Netscape, which is pretty much gone. There's Opera. And there's Firefox/Mozilla.
There's a bunch of others, but those are the biggest
ones. Small, though.
And don't forget, when you buy service from a cable company or a DSL company, whether it's Comcast or SBC, they will typically download a little application that'll put a new skin on those applications we're talking about and might fake you out.
And confuse. Speaking of confusing, we are confusing. We're geeks. We're talking about technical stuff, but you can call in with questions and comments if you're confused. The phone number is 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We are, amazing enough, in the last 20 minutes we haven't been speaking, but we are speaking with Paul McGrath, who is the creator of carshare.biz. He also is an improvist, and he has been part of Umjum Improv for at least 10 years.
It's about 10 years.
Yeah. And there's this great Santa Cruz Improv Festival starting today and going through the 30th of July.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's all over the place. To learn more about, well, it's mostly Actors Theater, of course, is doing it. Actors Theater is downtown 1001 Center Street in downtown Santa Cruz. It should be a blast. A whole bunch of improvists. Gosh, it looks like 10 groups.
Yeah, loads of it.
Pretty impressive. And we're talking about some pretty big players. I'm not big on the... you want to tell us a little bit about the different people that are involved in the scripties? Or involved in the improv groups?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a bunch of shows from San Francisco. We've got the Groundlings... and from LA, and and from San Francisco, Weeby Negroes. And so they're guest performances. And
so they're from out of the area coming in for
yeah,
this festival.
Yeah, exactly.
And, of course, MGM will be performing and Scriptease.
July 23rd.
Another Santa Cruz space. Are you doing July 23rd?
July 23rd for Al.
Actors Theater, if you're interested in hearing more of Paul's wonderful voice, you can you can go to the improv troupe and see him on perform with MGM. Okay, we're talking about carshare.biz, basically a company that allows you to allows another company to help its workers find people and such.
Yeah. So give people alternatives to driving alone, basically.
That's right.
You know.
Now, I work at the UCSC, and UCSC's giant problem with parking.
Right.
It's a parking problem. It's, you know, the commute for me is actually not that bad because I'm coming from San Jose Valley, but the actual parking costs a lot of money if you're going to park on campus. And finding someone for that purpose seems to make a lot of sense.
Absolutely.
There's so many people that work at the place. I'm going to have to look into it.
Is this a standalone application that people use, or is it actually built into the browser?
It's actually a standalone application. It's purely a website, basically.
Now, do they integrate this into their intranet?
No, they don't have to. All they need to do is provide internet access to their employees.
Okay.
That's all they have to do.
We've got more calls coming in, so we're going to go ahead and take the calls, and we're going to start right away with Mark from Santa Cruz. Mark, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi there. Hi. I had a quick question about defragmenting.
Okay.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. I tried to run my defragmenting program the other day. This is for Windows 98, older machine. It's booted up, started, and it gets to about 1%, 2% completion, and then that's all it does. It never
just sits there and spins. Okay.
You might want to try and do a check disk on the hard drive just to make sure there aren't any errors or anything needs to be cleaned up as far as lost fragments, data fragments, that sort of thing. They can actually stop a defragger from working properly.
Oh, okay.
So check disk is very important. Usually it'll tell you that it can't do it, and you need to do a check disk first. But with Windows 98, that might be old enough to where they didn't have that feature. They didn't have that check in there yet.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have a lot of hard drive space in your machine?
It seems like it, yeah.
So if you right-click on your C drive and say properties, it'll tell you how much space you have left.
Okay.
You need to have some space to make it not last 7 days defragging, because it's doing a lot of work and it needs room to do
that.
Yeah,
it's moving files to another location temporarily so that it can line up all the files, because your files are, you know, scattered all over your hard drive in pieces.
They're like fragmented or something.
So what's happening is, what a defragmenter does is it takes all those pieces and puts them together so your hard drive doesn't have to work as hard. And to do that, it needs space.
Also, if your machine is a 98 and you're doing hard drive maintenance and stuff, another way to deal with this whole problem is to get another hard drive. They're cheap. Your hard drive is going to fail. All hard drives fail. So it's just a matter of time, and you'll lose all the data on your drive unless you spend thousands of dollars to get someone to bring the data back. So I recommend, if you're taking some time to make your machine faster, there's nothing like a clean, big, new hard drive.
Although moving your OS over, it could be difficult.
So what you want to do is you want to get your original 98 disk and get a new hard drive, put in the machine. There's a bit of a process, a bit of a workflow to do it. You can learn how to do that by Googling upgrade hard drive, I'm sure. But in general, you're going to get a new hard drive, you're going to make that your primary, you're going to install Windows 98, and then your other hard drive, you're going to plug into another channel on your board and copy the data files you want over and install applications all fresh. You'll be amazed at how much better and faster your computer will work.
And if you have a very large hard drive, I would say partition it if you can. So make maybe a 20 or 30 gig partition.
Is
your
that?
C drive, and then make it the rest of your drive a D partition. And keep all your data on a separate partition from your OS. That way it leaves enough space for your OS and all its applications that you install. And if something were to happen to your OS, you don't have to worry about the data being on that partition.
The only unfortunate part is Microsoft still isn't really supporting it well with the My Documents folder. The My Documents folder kind of always exists on the C drive.
Okay.
So, but in general, it's a great idea to do that. And that's our suggestion, Mark.
Okay, and what's the approximate cost? Are you allowed to discuss that?
We can talk about that. So you have a desktop machine or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Okay, good, because a laptop's a lot different story. You can probably get a new hard drive that's 80 gigs for $80.
PriceGrabber.com, my friend. PriceGrabber.com.
In fact, I just bought a new drive at PriceGrabber.
And how much was it, John?
Well, it was an optical DVD burner.
Oh, okay. Really good prices, though.
Yeah, it's the best place. You know what's nice is that it'll ask for your zip code, and you put your zip code in, and it'll tell you if you get it from, like, New York, you don't have to pay tax.
Right.
And a lot of these places have free shipping. Right. And so it'll find out what's the cheapest price for you, which place is the cheapest. It'll line you up with maybe a dozen different places you could buy it from. And it'll tell you what's the cheapest, and it always...
You can sort by cheapest or zip code location.
And they're all rated.
An investment in a new hard drive is a pretty good investment in your computing life. It's not that expensive, and your drive is going to fail eventually. And if you buy drive every 2 years, you have a less likely chance of that happening.
And Santa Cruz Electronics in Santa Cruz, they sell hard drives, and they can move your data over to a new hard drive.
So really? Nice. That's a good feature. Thank you very much, Mark, for the call.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
We're going to take one more call today on GeekSpeak from Aptos. Ark, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
I just had a comment about too much mouse movement to get to the Google search area in the Firefox browser.
Yeah, Sean and his atrophied right arm.
left arm. He's left-handed.
I'm trying to remember which side of the keyboard the K is on, but you can control K or control E in a Windows machine to get up to that Google search area.
Now, are you talking about the default Google search area?
Exactly, the one that's built into the browser.
Yeah, so why do we need this plug-in thing from Google? It must have other features. Now somebody's got to install it. But you're right. Whenever you're in Firefox, you just do Control or Command K, depending if you're Mac or not.
Yeah, Control E works as well.
Well, that's a one-hand thing. That's a left-hand boom.
Yeah, right. The unfortunate thing is that in Thunderbird, Control K takes you up to where you can filter out your, by subject or sender.
Uh-huh.
But Control E does not.
Oh, I see.
So it's not quite orthogonal, but it's still pretty good.
Okay, so Control-K, if you start using that with your right hand, you're set on.
The Google toolbar that comes with Firefox is just the search area window.
Right.
Right.
The one that you download, the new toolbar from Google, adds many more features.
Okay.
It's a longer toolbar. You can click on it and search for news. I mean, just one. You can type in and click on news, search, images. You don't have to then...
Okay.
So it's just like a gateway into the Google homepage.
Yeah. It adds more Google features.
I'm not sold. I like personally using the built-in search feature to start the search experience. One of the things that is nice in Safari, for example, when you do that, is that phrase becomes in your... When you do a find in the browser, that phrase gets copied into your find box. So it's really easy to find the content and then the page content. But
And it adds spell check. So if you're typing into web forms, you now have spell check through the Google toolbar.
Okay, that's cool.
I think one of the great things about the Firefox search bar, though, is the fact that you can put the multiple engines in there as well. So,
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're right. That's awesome. In fact, I'm looking up orthogonal right now on dictionary.com.
Great. You can tell me that I used it wrong.
I'm sure you used it right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Today's show of GeekSpeak was dedicated around carshare.biz. Paul McGrath joined us in the studio to talk about it. Paul's a longtime theater friend of mine and is a member of GM Improv Group, performing on July 23rd. Can't make that. Saturday, right?
Yeah, that's right.
You're listening to GeekSpeak. The geeks this morning were Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and, of course, our guest, Paul McGrath. If you'd like to find out more information about CarShare and getting your company involved in it, go to carshare.biz. You'll learn all about it from there. Community Alliance with Family Farmers provided a grant for this program, buying fresh and local produce from farmers, markets, CSAs, retailers, and restaurants supports the local economy. For information about the Buy Fresh, Buy Local campaign, 761-8507 or online at caff.org. You are listening to GeekSpeak. You have been listening to GeekSpeak. We'll be back next week as we are every week. I want to thank our phone answer today, Michael, and, of course, the geeks for being here. And for you that called in, thank you very much for making GeekSpeak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out. And you know, who really wants to listen to that? This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. Next week, we'll be back. We're going to be talking, hopefully, with a lawyer about copyright, how it affects us, and what's been happening. Coming up next, of course, is Open Road with Matt Pierce. He doesn't have anybody live in today, but that's okay because it just gives him more time to mix the music, and he's, of course, very good at doing that. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, or on the web at kusp.org. For KUSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. In just a few minutes, we'll be back with Matt Pierce on Open Road, and in about a minute, we'll have some NPR news for you. Talk to you next week. Thanks for joining us on GeekSpeak.
NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Many Londoners steer clear of the bus and subway systems this morning, a day after a string of bombings that killed more than 50 people. Hundreds more were injured. London's police chief, Ian Blair, says it's vital that people try to get back to as normal a life as possible.
The critical situation is that both for the City of London and for...